What's going on, NFL fans? It is another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We got Berge and Manish alongside. Manish, do you want to introduce our special guest tonight?
Yeah, we're really happy to have NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero. You can see Tom on a million platforms, but I highly encourage you to watch him every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday on the Insider Show on the NFL Network, 7 p.m. Eastern Time with a cast of thousands. Many times Ian Rappaport, Mike Garofolo, and with all apologies to Ian, Tom by far has the best hair on the show. So congratulations on that, Tom.
Yeah, this is not my best hair day here. Like, we're a little flat today.
Yeah, well, hey, you know what? I would kill for that, but that's a different discussion for a different time. I did want to, you know, talk about your recent article. It's an annual story that you put out. It's one of the most interesting stories of the NFL calendar for me because it's informative, intriguing. It really gives NFL fans and followers an insight into which names they're going to be hearing a lot about in the upcoming head coaching cycle when the season is over. What I found particularly interesting about this, which focuses on, I believe, 24 potential head coaching candidates, is that it's the younger candidates. They fit the Sean McVay archetype you had mentioned in the article, that everyone's looking for the next Sean McVay. What I found fascinating, what I was unaware of, was that since McVay was hired in 2017, more than half of the head coaches that have been hired kind of fit that archetype, under 45 years old, no prior head coaching experience. And that's really the focus of your article. So I wanted to jump right in and talk about the reigning NFL champions, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles. Kevin Petullo, you know, he's come under fire this season. Eagles offense has lagged, coming off an historic season a year ago. So I wanted to get your thoughts, you know, based off of the people that you talk to in the NFL decision makers, why you think that he could be a quality head coaching candidate in this upcoming cycle.
And listen, let's start by framing this, you know, the correct way, which is that, you know, the 24 names, I would anticipate most, if not all, the guys on that list will get a head coaching interview. That's generally how it's played out in the past. You know, some people have said, well, you know, you got 24 names on there, there's only gonna be 6-7 jobs. It's go back to a year ago. The Jets interviewed close to 20 people for their head coaching opening. The Bears interviewed upwards of 15 people. This has become commonplace because of the rules that the NFL has set up, because they want the process to be longer, because they want it to be a diverse process, and because now the early stages of this are all Zooms. And so why wouldn't you just go and talk to a whole bunch of people, get different perspectives? You know, and that's where you've got this, you know, an array of different potential candidates. You know, certainly the Eagles offense, I don't think it's any secret that they have been inconsistent this season. If you watched that game last night against the Chargers, and listen, nothing's perfect, obviously, but I didn't see, you know, just something where you're obviously like, oh man, the play calling here is so bad. Like, you've got missed passes, you've got dropped balls, you've got some creative stuff like the pitch to Saquon Barkley out of the tush push formation that goes for a big touchdown. But there's just a lot of things where the entire season, it just has never felt like the Eagles are completely in sync. You know, for Kevin Petullo, just in terms of who he is, you know, he came up the way that a lot of people would like, which is he coached a bunch of different positions. He's been exposed to different things. He's had a lot of hands-on training. Obviously, he came over with Nick Sirianni from Indianapolis. He's getting his opportunity this year to be the play caller. And, you know, even before his house was getting egged, he's also then been the target of a lot of the, you know, the anger, the frustration with why isn't this the same team that we saw back in February in the Super Bowl. You know, there's no question that things changed. Kellen Moore went on to become the head coach in New Orleans, and despite their record, I think he's done a really good job. Their teams who have faced New Orleans say, you know, the stuff that they're doing schematically is really good. With Petullo working alongside, you know, Nick Sirianni, it's been, you know, a matter of just trying to find their identity. It's a process that's ongoing. You saw Jalen Hurts make some big throws last night. You saw him do some things that you just don't know, why is he throwing the ball in that spot? You know, the fumble after he recovers the ball. There's a lot of different things. I'm not making excuses for Petullo, but, you know, spend 5 minutes with Kevin Petullo, talk to people who have worked with him and know him. He has the traits, which is what you're looking for to be a head coach. Is this going to be his year? The fact that it's been a bumpy ride for the Eagles don't help him, but I would not be shocked at all if at some point we see Petullo being a head coaching candidate.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I know Kevin dating back a decade or so when he was with the Jets. And I remember Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was the quarterback at the time, really effusive in his praise of Kevin. And just talking to Kevin one-on-one, you can tell that he's got leadership traits. And it is an easy scapegoat. You know, fans, easy scapegoat, first guy, play caller. Get rid of the play caller. Make a change here. Well, we don't know the dynamics of the play design. We don't know what the reads were or what the defense was. I'm a big believer in Kevin Petullo. It has been an uneven season, without a doubt. And, you know, you'd be disingenuous if you thought things were, you know, coming up roses this year for them. But what I find to be fascinating, Tom, you know this, based on all the research you've done over the past, you know, 15, 20 years, when you're searching for a head coach, it's not as simple as, let's just get a guy who's a good play caller. You know, he's going to be the next great head coach. There are real intangible traits, leadership traits that are really paramount to that type of position. And that's why, you know, I think that a guy like Petullo is well deserving to get interviews during this cycle. I just want to flip it over to the other side of the ball on Monday night. Jesse Minter, the Harbaugh brothers have been so effusive in their praise of Minter. I think Jim Harbaugh has been, I think maybe you had mentioned it in your article, like the PR guy for Minter for years now, dating back to their time together in Michigan. What do you hear about Minter, and what do you think he could bring to the table as a potential head coach?
Well, Minter's one of the guys that I don't personally have a relationship with, but talking to a lot of people within the Chargers organization, people who've been around him at different stops, you know, what you hear is that he does have, like you're talking about, Manish, those leadership traits. He does have, the building blocks to potentially be a successful head coach. I remember last year when I was putting Minter on the list for the first time, which was, you know, he didn't end up getting any interviews, which was surprising to me because Jim Harbaugh had so strongly supported him. But frankly, you know, having a defensive background, being a first-year coordinator, a lot of times those two things can work against you. But when you really dig in, you hear a lot of the positive traits on Jesse Minter. When I reached out to Jim Harbaugh, you know, I remember he sent me like this long text, which is kind of how how Jim is, just talking about extolling the virtues of him. And, you know, young coaches, fat part of the bat. I remember that was part of the text that he sent me here, because you've got that growth. That's right when guys, you know, Jesse's like 43, 44. So he's right in that area where he does have that volume of experience, in different places. I think that, you know, just to zoom this out to the macro for a second here, we're talking about two names that aren't necessarily going to be on the tip of everyone's tongue in the head coaching cycle. But who is? You know, there's not a Ben Johnson in this cycle. There's not a dialed up, hey, this guy, if he wants a job, is getting a head coaching job this year. We don't have that. I don't think we have a Mike Vrabel either, where everyone thought going in, okay, Vrabel is going to get one of these jobs. The closest thing would be Mike McCarthy. Not every team is going to want a guy in his early 60s who's a third timer. But Mike is one of the most successful coaches of his era. He's won over 60% of his games. He's won a Super Bowl. He went to the playoffs, I think, like 13 times in 18 years as a head coach. If you want the guy who's going to step in, you know he can build a culture. You know he can run an offense. You know he can win at a high level. Mike's the obvious guy. But again, you know, Vrabel's over a decade younger. It was just the dynamics are a little bit different, all of which brings these different names into the mix. In terms of the young guys, I don't know. I couldn't possibly peg it for you. You know, whether we're talking about a Minter, whether we're talking about some of the other guys, you know, on the list, we can certainly get into here. But there's not like one who I feel really confident about. We're 3 weeks till the end of the season. Like, all right, that guy's definitely getting a job. There's maybe some that have stronger cases than others and some that are a little bit more of a projection. But, you know, you got Mike McCarthy that's out there. Who knows if anybody, you know, goes down the Bill Belichick road. John Gruden, potentially, he's still got a lawsuit pending with the league that's been going through that process. You got some of those other guys who've been head coaches before, Matt Nagy, who, you know, made the playoffs a couple of times in Chicago. You got guys like that, but if it's not them, probably, you know, again, historical averages, three or four of these young guys, first timers under age 45, are going to get head coaching jobs. They're going to be somebody from those 24 guys on my list. I'm pretty confident in that, but I couldn't sit here and tell you which one it's going to be. That's how wide open this cycle is.
And I just see these young names on your list here, like Declan Doyle, the guy who's the Bears OC, mm-hmm. not calling plays right now there with Ben Johnson. And then I know you'll get into it later. The other young guys on the list, Manish. But It just seems like, do you feel like there's a push towards going younger to connect with the younger athlete, or are these owners just looking for somebody who may be more like cost controlled and have like a longer, I guess, tenure with the team?
Well, you go back to when Sean McVay was hired, and you know, that was an outlier at the time. Yes, there'd been a lot of coaches, you know, who had gotten jobs in their, you know, late 30s, early 40s. Sean was 30. He had a really unique background because he had grown up in it, because he had been an offensive coordinator at, I want to say, 26 years old. He'd already called plays. Like, his resume was completely unique. But in going back to why the Rams were willing to hire him, the explanation I got one time was, well, we figured, okay, you're sitting there going, well, this guy's going to be a head coach eventually, but we can't hire him. It's like, well, but wait, if we're hiring a head coach now, we don't want to be hiring again in 3 or 4 years when he's quote unquote ready. Why wouldn't we just hire the guy who's going to be a head coach and do it a little bit early? Like, we want this guy to be here for 5, 10, 15 years. Let's just do it. And so you've seen a mixed bag on that, frankly. I mean, you've seen guys get jobs, you know, early, and it's too big for them, or there's circumstances. You know, Brian Callahan was a guy who was on my list a couple of years ago, and I know Callie, and he's a great guy, and he's really smart, and he'd been around a lot of great quarterbacks in his time. He had a volume of knowledge. He just stepped into a situation where there were a lot of different things that happened. Certainly some of it was on him, not all of it was on him, and a year and a half later, the Titans are pulling the plug. You know, ideally, if you're going to hire that young coach, you got to be willing to give him some runway. Kellen Moore is going to win 3 or 4 games this year. There's no way in my mind, and I don't anticipate it, that you should even be thinking about, well, should we fire Kellen Moore right now? Is this not good enough? No, he's taking over a team that's not very good roster wise and is starting, you know, this coterie of different quarterbacks. You know, you've got to place guys into the right situation. I do think that, you know, even more so than the connecting, because the best coaches, you know, if you hire Mike McCarthy, he knows how to connect with young players. There's plenty of those guys. Aaron Glenn has no problem connecting to this generation of players, but it's more so about, you know, the juice and the progressive upside that you have when you have a young head coach who can grow along with the team. There's some places that are just not set up for those guys to have success. But like you mentioned, a Declan Doyle, he's 29. Okay. Is he going to get a head coaching job this year? If I had to guess right now, I would say it's probably a little bit too soon. But are people going to call a guy who's been in the room with Ben Johnson this past year, who was in the room with Sean Payton for several years prior to that, who has been with different staffs, knows these different things? Everyone's going to want to know what Ben Johnson's doing in Chicago. And Declan, because he's coached the position, he was the tight ends coach in Denver, gets the OC job. Like, he's had a lot of hands-on experience. It's not the wildest thing in the world to say that somebody goes, you know what? This guy's probably going to be a dude in a few years. Like, let's just hire him right now. I think at minimum, that gets Declan Doyle in the door of some places after the season. Every team is going to have its own criteria. If your criteria is a bright, young, offensive mind who is going to get better and better and can grow with a young football team, that background might appeal to you.
Yeah, going from Sean Payton then into Ben Johnson's offense is a pretty decent start to your career.
And I just say that if these owners are going to hire these young offensive minds, they have to give them that leash. You kind of said it there. We've talked a little bit on this podcast about how owners are quick to pull the trigger on these coaches, and they end up paying these guys years down the road because they make those decisions. I want to ask you about a guy on your list here that was an interim head coach last year, now is with the New England Patriots as a pass game coordinator, and that's Thomas Brown. I'm a Patriots fan at heart here, probably the homer of the podcast here. It was nice. I guess the one nice thing about being bad for 5 years was that we didn't have to worry about teams poaching our coordinators to go for head coaching jobs like we did for the last 20 years. Given the way that Drake May has developed this year, obviously he has Josh McDaniels as his offensive coordinator and play caller. Thomas Brown had a big factor in that, I would say, simply because of his experience. Mike Vrabel, when they interviewed him for the OC job, like in your article, stated that he was so impressed that they wanted to keep him around. Do you see, right, he's a guy that's been interviewed multiple times over the last few years. Do you see him getting a realistic shot at a head coaching gig this year?
Well, the fact that the Patriots are good definitely helps. I mean, it's the same part of the same reason I've got three guys from the Rams on the list, because, all right, you're going to go, all right, it's the winner, it's the team that's good. somebody's got to be doing something right there. So, you know, let's talk to some of those guys. But Thomas is in a different category because, as you mentioned, he's had head coaching interviews on several occasions in the past. He came, you know, he had a really tough situation last year with a Bears team that had already fired the OC. Then they put him into the play calling job. Then like 3 weeks later, he's the head coach of the team. They went to Lambeau in the final game of the season and beat the Packers in the first time in forever. I remember Sean McVay, you know, at one point talking about Thomas is one of the greatest competitors I've ever been around. And those two competed back when they were high school kids in Georgia. Thomas was a really good running back in college. He was drafted. He suffered a brutal injury. He basically got horse collared in a preseason game and never got his opportunity to play in the NFL. But another guy who you spend a few minutes around, you go, okay, this guy's got the traits. He's got the juice. You can envision him at the front of the room, but you've got to want to have, you know, that style of coach. Like Thomas, I think realistically would not be coming in as, all right, he's going to be the play caller and he's going to be the head coach. He's probably going to be we're setting the program, hire really good coordinators underneath him. And that's how you're going to build. And that's not to say Thomas couldn't be a good play caller someplace, but just his skill set is probably a little bit different. And we've seen other head coaches in recent years who have also found out that their best skill set is not, you know, trying to do everything. The Eagles didn't take off until Nick Sirianni handed over the play calling duties to Shane Steichen. Mike McCarthy's done it both ways, to go back to that example where, you know, he called it almost his entire time in Green Bay, goes to Dallas. Kellen Moore is there. Kellen's got the relationship with the quarterback. He had Kellen call it for a few years and they were really good. And then it became the right time for Kellen to move on and go do something else with at that time, the Chargers. Mike took it back over. There's different ways that you can do it. It's all about reading the people in the room, knowing that Thomas has been, you know, with Sean, with the Rams. He was second in two disaster situations in a row, Carolina in Frank Reich's half a year. And then Chicago when Eberflus got fired. He was in some tough spots, but he knows, you know, he has a good feel for people. He's got a really good feel for how to build the program. Is this the year for it? I wouldn't be surprised at all if Thomas Brown gets an interview. And, you know, that's what it takes in a wide open year like this. You just don't know what direction somebody's going to go.
No, there's only two open spots right now, the Giants and the Titans. Like you said, you use that same verbiage to lead off your article with one of the more wide open coaching searches in recent history. Do you think there are any locks to kind of go by the wayside? I know we're not calling for people's jobs anymore, but do you think there are any interesting situations that might open up?
Well, I mean, there's certainly, you know, situations. I mean, just look at the records around the league. You know, the Falcons are going into a game on Thursday night. They're already eliminated from playoff contention. They put a lot into this season, including trading next year's first-round draft pick to go get James Pierce Jr. You rewind it a year. The big swing on Kirk Cousins followed 6 weeks later by a big swing on Michael Penix. To this point, we'll see. Penix has a while left. Cousins is probably going to be someplace else in 2026. But neither of those big swings has worked out. Any time that you have a team that has not made the playoffs in two consecutive years with a veteran coach, or I would say 3 years with a young coach, you're kind of in that position. You know, what does Arizona do? I think that if you look at the way that they've been gutted, particularly on offense with injuries, you know, it's hard for me to sit here and pin that on coaching, especially because they were in all those games early on. But, you know, you lose 10 out of 11. You know, obviously there's always going to be, you know, eyeballs on the situation. The Raiders too, you know, that situation has not gone their way just in every possible regard this year. Are they once again going to pull the plug after 1 year on a head coach? You know, I would tell you this, we're sitting here 4 weeks, you know, four games left for all these teams. There's a lot of places that still, even though it shouldn't be recency bias and it shouldn't be the small sample size, one win shouldn't change things, but it will. It's about how do teams finish in these final four games? Are guys still playing hard? Does it unravel? There are plenty of times where we think a coach is safe at this time with 4 weeks to go, and by the time it's over, they're fired. Everyone in the world seemed to be talking about Mike McDaniel earlier this year when the Dolphins are 1-6, I think they were, about when is he getting fired? Is he getting fired after they lose in Cleveland? They're now 6-7. They're playing the Steelers for, you know, potentially staying in the hunt for a playoff spot. That's where, you know, there's sometimes a rush to judgment. And obviously we had the two moves earlier. Tough spot for Brian Callahan with a team that's very much in a rebuild mode and a rookie quarterback. You know, the results just weren't good enough. They felt like they were going to make the move at the end of the year anyway. They wanted to not conduct a coaching search behind Callie's back. And that's too bad for, you know, for Brian, but you know, it is what it is. And then with the Giants, it was year four of Dable, and they had started 2-9, three consecutive seasons. When that happens, you know, you, again, I think that that's kind of one of the things that people need to understand is you come to these conclusions. There are plenty of teams that have not made up their minds yet, but if you do decide by October, November, like we're moving on anyway, then at that point, if you feel like you can still stabilize things and have someone who steps in on an interim basis and just kind of keep things from devolving into chaos, then there are some advantages to let's not be making calls. And then the head coach that we still employ is finding out we're making calls on guys. Let's just clean break it. And we'll see again in these final 4 weeks, does anybody else decide, even if it's a week or two, just to get a jump start and maybe interview some of these guys who are out of work, which is how the ball got rolling as quickly as it did on Vrabel last year.
Tom, along those lines, I find the AFC North to be fascinating because I could see a world where all four of those coaches are back next year. There's actually a world where none of those four coaches are back next year. Now, I don't think John Harbaugh is going anywhere, but I wouldn't entirely rule it out. But we've already heard Steelers fans talking about their disdain toward Mike Tomlin, who is one of the top handful of best coaches of this generation, as is Harbaugh. Zach Taylor, not his fault that Burrow repeatedly gets injured, but the reality is that they have underperformed in recent years. And even Kevin Stefanski, two-time coach of the year, but where are the Browns headed? So I just wanted to get your thoughts on the dynamics in that division and what potentially could happen in a few weeks.
The common thread, Manish, is it's been a disappointing season to varying degrees for all those teams. The Steelers right now are the team. Somebody's going to win the division. Okay, start there. The Steelers are 7-6 after beating the Ravens last week. Mike Tomlin hasn't won a playoff game since the Obama administration. I mean, the reality is they just haven't, as much as they're always in it. They always have a winning record. They haven't been able to go, further than that in, 8-9 years here. But at the same time, you also can say Mike Tomlin hasn't had the quarterback since Ben Roethlisberger, even before Ben retired. For several years at the end with Ben, it was his arm was kind of going. The body wasn't quite the same. He wasn't the same player at that point. They took a swing with Kenny Pickett. Variety of reasons it didn't work out. Then they've been in this cycle of the different veterans with, Russ and Fields last year, now Aaron Rodgers. We'll see. I mean, who knows? They could run the table. They could go 11-6, host the playoff game, maybe advance in the playoffs and all this goes away. I would tell you, Mike Tomlin's not getting fired. That would shock me. And I don't think that there's any other scenarios that exist unless Mike Tomlin goes to Art Rooney and says, I want to be someplace else, instead of coaching a 20th year in Pittsburgh. They've not come to that point. We have this discussion every year for like 5 years running about Mike Tomlin. But unless he goes to Art Rooney and just says, I want to do something different, there's no reason to believe that he's not going to be still the coach in 2026. With the Ravens, John Harbaugh got an extension last year. You're right that at 6-7, he's been there a long time. John got there in 2008, so this is year 18 for him. That's a really, really long run in one spot. But Steve Bisciotti, similar to Art Rooney, has been a believer in the continuity of it. If this goes totally sideways and they go 6-11, you never know. But John Harbaugh is on that short list of coaches that if he wants to keep coaching and somehow did end up not being the Ravens coach anymore, he'd be immediately a top candidate on the market. I don't think Zach Taylor's going anywhere for some of the same reasons that you said. Also, the Bengals just don't fire coaches. Marvin Lewis coached out his contract like two or three times. Zach's got 1 year left on his deal. They may well just say, coach out your deal. Not because like this season was underwhelming, but more so just how they do business. We'll see exactly how that plays out with Zach, but I don't see him not being in Cincinnati. And then with Cleveland, it's just been a roller coaster ride. They've been to the playoffs twice. Kevin's been, I think, really highly of Kevin Stefanski. Two-time coach of the year, as you mentioned. But they've, when it's gone bad, it's been pretty bad. This is a team this year that you would have liked to see win more games. But also you go into training camp and your quarterback room is Flacco, Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, and Shedeur Sanders, plus an injured Deshaun Watson. You kind of know you're in a transition phase right now. I will say, I think that, Stefanski's gotten way too much grief for how the quarterback room has been handled this season. You're trying to do the best. by everybody in the room, and particularly the development of your young players. You know, whether it was Dylan Gabriel, whether it was Shedeur Sanders, by not playing those guys out of the gate, you're protecting their development. No quarterback, much less a guy throwing, you know, third, fifth round, should be like, I need to start in week one, or, you know, just trade me to someplace else. Like, you need time, man. Like, you got to, both those guys came, you know, from offenses and play styles where, you know, there were things they needed to work on. With Dylan Gabriel, you know, he had, you know, the innate processing ability, but he came from that, you know, that offense at Oregon where there's a huge transition. With Shedeur, you know, he's really accurate. He's really tough, but he's also a guy who, you know, he did hold the ball in college. You know, he would take these long extended sacks, and you still see a little of that on Sundays. You also see some really good things from Shedeur. I thought he played well in that game on Sunday, but he still made mistakes. Like, that's part of the process here. Letting the rookies be rookies is important. That rookie class in Cleveland, if there's one thing for Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski to latch onto, it's that entire group: Mason Graham, Carson Schlesinger, the two running backs, including Quinshon Judkins, Harold Fannin Jr., who's like the number six fantasy tight end this year. You know, they've found a bunch of really good guys. That's your young core, but it's going to take more drafts like that to get it where you want to go. They got a ton of resources, an extra first round pick in 2026. You know, do they anticipate that this is the regime to be able to guide that next phase in the rebuild? That's going to guide the decision-making in Cleveland right now. But Kevin's another guy who, in the world where he becomes available, if he wants to coach, he will be a top candidate again.
Yeah. Manish, you had one more question about a young guy. Do you want to sneak that in there?
Yeah. You know, this is particularly fascinating for me because Davis Webb is on your list. He's 30 years old, very much the same age as Sean McVay was when the Rams hired him, just shy of his 31st birthday. Davis turns 31 in January, learning from Sean Payton. As you pointed out in your article, Payton allowed Davis Webb to call a preseason game this year. I remember covering Davis in New York toward the tail end of his career, and you could get a sense, you know this, Tom, you know, being a beat reporter before you became a national insider. When you talk to different players, you get a sense, you know what, this guy is really smart, not just football smart, with all due respect to that term, but just a really intelligent guy, which you can envision becoming a coach at some point. So, you know, when he went into coaching after his career was over, it didn't surprise me. And now that, you know, his name is amongst this collection of people under 45 or under 40 to potentially be in the mix for a head coaching job is really fascinating to me because, again, 10 years ago, when he was, fresh out of college, a few years out of college, you could get a sense that this guy really had a good head on his shoulders. So when you talk to people around the league, what are their impressions about Davis Webb and what he potentially could be as a head coach at some point down the line?
Davis Webb's on the fast track, and that does not surprise anybody that he's encountered. He was in the 2017 draft, which was also the Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Mitch Trubisky, it was that draft. Davis ended up going in the third round. But you remember, he was at Texas Tech until a guy named Mahomes showed up, took the job, and then Davis transferred to Cal for his final college season. I did stories. I went down to Texas and did stories on Mahomes and Davis Webb when I was working for USA Today that year. And I was sitting in Davis's his parents' living room, and we were talking, and you're right, Manish, the moment you talk to him, you're like, okay, this guy's he's really, really sharp. So he pulls out this playbook that he's been putting together. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was like since the seventh grade or something. He was drawing up his own playbook, and he was so transparent about like what his goals were. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm you know, excited, and I want to play, you know, 5-10 years in the NFL, and that'll help me, you know, build my resume to be a coach. He was basically being like, yeah, I know that I'm probably not going to be a superstar player, but I can be good enough to soak everything up and then, you know, go right into what his real passion was, which was coaching. I believe his dad was a coach, and so like he had that in his blood, and he wanted to do it. And then so when remember, he was on the Giants, I think, his final year, and then like immediately got hired as a quarterback's coach. It was like, yeah, this all tracks perfectly here. Davis is, he's going to be a head coach in the NFL. There's no doubt about it. I think that there could be at least one head coaching interview based on my conversations for him this year. I also believe that he is going to be a hot offensive coordinator candidate going into this offseason. The Broncos, even though their offense has been, you know, kind of up and down, there have been some bumps, and they're still figuring out some things with a pretty young wide receiver group there. But, you know, the work that he's done with Bo Nix and helping him continue to grow as a player, and the moment that Davis, again, when he gets in the room, he's going to be really impressive. So, you know, just talking to candidates too, especially, you know, guys who might be a little bit older, that's a name that always comes up because you want to have balance on your staff. If you're going to be an older head coach, you know, have the up and coming guy who comes from a different type of a system that could run that offense. I think Davis is he's a fascinating guy. I don't know if it's this year, but, you know, sometime in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, I fully anticipate we're going to be talking about him as head coach.
Tom, I want to get your thoughts on the Giants. First, let me just kind of backtrack to what you said earlier, mentioning Mike McCarthy. And I'm really glad that you did, because, you know, I view McCarthy as the Larry Brown of NFL coaches. And if you know anything about the NBA, Larry Brown had a longstanding reputation of coming into a program that was struggling, building that program up. Maybe, you know, he didn't win the NBA championship every year, but he got them to relevance. He stabilized that franchise. And when I look at the New York Giants, I feel as if that is what they need. You know, they've gone on hard times now for almost a decade. And a guy like McCarthy, age notwithstanding, has a longstanding record of just being a winner. And I know I'm oversimplifying it. He's also a champion, by the way. But beyond that, I thought he did some terrific things with the Cowboys. And maybe that had run its course. I don't know. I personally thought he got a raw deal there, should have stayed. But regardless, I do think that he deserves an opportunity. And I think that the Giants would be a great place for him. But if they do decide to go with one of these younger coaches, there's two guys that are really fascinating to me on both sides of the ball. I want to get your thoughts. One is on the defensive side, Chris Shula, defensive coordinator for the Rams. I think he could be a good fit from everything I've heard about, you know, his leadership traits. And then the other one is Clint Kubiak, you know, coming from a football family, Gary Kubiak, by extension, Mike Shanahan principles. You're seeing in Seattle that Sam Darnold has picked up where he left off in Minnesota, in large part because of his skill set, but also the guidance of Kubiak. I want to get your thoughts on those three guys. How do you think those three guys, each guy, would fit if they were, in fact, to take over in New York?
Well, go back to the 2020 coaching search that the Giants ran, which I believe was ended up with the Joe Judge hire. Mike McCarthy was also a strong candidate for that job. And in fact, the story that I had heard at the time was when Mike went to Dallas, and Dallas had run a pretty quick search. They interviewed, like, I think they interviewed Marvin Lewis, Ron Rivera, and Mike McCarthy. And Mike was down there, like, you know, having drinks with Jerry and doing, you know, the whole Cowboys thing. And the Giants realized that Mike was probably not going to get out of there. They were calling and trying to get him on a plane to go up there to the Giants. So there's like a parallel universe where, you know, Jerry and Mike aren't out all night, and eventually he's the head coach, at least in Jerry's telling, that's what he says, and he ends up being the coach of the Giants, and who knows, you know, where everything goes from there. So there is a long history. You know, John Mara, who, you know, certainly we're all, you know, keeping him in our prayers. John's a nice man. I've always enjoyed being around him, you know, battling something very serious right now. But, you know, John was a part of that search. Kevin Abrams was a part of that search, who's still in the Giants organization. Dave Gettleman is not there anymore. It's now Joe Shane. Joe and Mike don't really know each other. But if you were looking for, we need the stable guy who, as you said, Manish, has won. I mean, I want to say he made the playoffs 13 out of 18 seasons, over 60% wins in his career. He's won a Super Bowl. And it was not just because, as people like to say, like, oh, well, he had Favre and he had Rodgers. It's like Favre wasn't playing well until Mike got there. And then year two, they go to the NFC Championship game with a 37-year-old Brett Favre. Aaron Rodgers was a developmental guy who had looked terrible in his first preseason. Then Mike got him in the QB school. Aaron deserves a ton of credit, but Mike had a role in that as well, of developing him moving forward. So you're right, Mike with Jackson Dart, I can absolutely see that, especially, you know, if Mike balances out the staff in terms of having some young guys out there with him, maybe a Davis Webb as an offensive coordinator. I could absolutely see that making sense. If they go the young direction, and for the Giants, the question is, are they willing to do that after, you know, several of their recent hires, not Pat Shurmur, but all the other recent hires, they've been first timers. Do you feel like that's a risk? My understanding is they are open to everything. It's not you have to have experience, you have to be offense, you have to be defense, anything like that. They feel like the roster is set up in such a way that, hey, if you're an offensive guy, you're going to be excited about Jackson Dart and Malik Nabers and the two running backs and Andrew Thomas when he's healthy. And Theo Johnson, you know, did some good things at tight end. If you're a defensive guy, well, you got three pass rushers and you've got the corner and you've got the safety that they signed from Miami. Like, you've got building blocks on both sides. You know, for Chris Shula, it's funny you mentioned two well-known NFL names, Chris Shula, the grandson of Don Shula. I mean, he's a dude. Of the three guys that I had on that list from the Rams, Mike LaFleur, Nate Shielhaus, who's another really young guy who I think is intriguing and will get he had offensive coordinator interviews last year. Wouldn't shock me if he's in that mix again, maybe even a head coaching interview. But Shula's the one who's probably the closest when you talk to people, just in terms of the presence. He's been very sharp. He's got a really good defense. You know, yes, if you are in that boat of we're willing to hire a defensive background guy and then have to have a really good plan for offense, I do think that Shula's a real candidate this year. And then with Clint, you know, Clint's been, I think, on five teams in 5 years. He's been in some tough spots. You know, he was calling it at the end in Minnesota with Mike Zimmer. Last year he was in New Orleans, and they did some good stuff down the stretch. Now he's in Seattle, where they're performing at a really high level. If you're just looking for the guy who's having the success, Clint checks all those boxes. You know, there are some guys who there's more, you know, more to it here. And maybe a guy is just a really good coordinator, not a head coach. That's what people will be trying to find out about Clint, because he is I don't know him well personally, but everyone around him says he is very, very flatline in terms of the personality. Like, what's that? How's that going to come across? He'll get fired up at times, you know, in meetings, but he is very, very calm in terms of his demeanor, which is an asset, I think, as a play caller. But how is that going to play in the meeting? Are people going to feel him enough that they feel like, you know, the command would work at the front of the room as the head coach? That's what people will be trying to figure out. But again, all these guys, man, I think that the majority of them, you know, may not be 24 out of 24, but I would be willing, I can't bet, but I would be willing to friendly wager $0 that somewhere 16 to 18 of these guys end up getting head coaching interviews. It'll probably be 30 to 35 names overall get head coaching interviews. That would be in line with recent historical averages. And so all these names we're talking about, most of them, I think, are going to end up getting interview slips. And then we'll see exactly where that goes through the course of January.
Well, you can catch Tom on NFL Network on the Insiders. Tom, I can't thank you enough for coming on, taking time out of your day to jump on with some guys like us. I appreciate it, man.
You got it, fellas. Appreciate you having me.
What a great interview we just concluded with Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. Excited to have him on. Hopefully he comes on in the future. Unbelievable get for us. That was a pretty unreal interview.
Yeah, pretty crazy that he took the time out of the day to come talk to us. I am absolutely thrilled with how that went.
Yeah, we did just jump right in the picks here. We don't want to keep everybody. I know everybody doesn't drive 2.5 hours to work, so let's keep it tight here. Let's jump into our rankings. We'll start at the bottom here. I give my analogy every week, my Packers analogy of the sports car. Sports car is finely tuned. We got some nice thick tires on it. We're going to have them at fifth at the power rankings this week. They finally put it together. Jordan Love looked good. The defense was buzzing. That front seven is scary when Micah Parsons gets going. They have a pretty good ground attack. They have a bunch of good wide receivers. I don't know. The Packers seem to me like somebody when they get going, and it's a really young team. So this might be that year where they maybe underachieve talent-wise but still get a lot done. And then years to come, they'll be an absolute problem.
Yeah, spoiler alert. I'm big on the Packers right now. We'll get to that when we start talking about our picks.
All right, who's number four, Manish?
Going with Seattle. You know, there's a yin and yang to Seattle. You know, they beat up on a pretty bad team last week, but they are 10-3. I think in the toughest division in football this season, the NFC West, what I find to be interesting about this team is that they're explosive offensively with Sam Darnold picking up where he left off in the regular season in Minnesota last year. Top five scoring team, but they're second in giveaways. And Darnold actually leads the NFL with 16 turnovers. So they'll be a fun team to watch in the postseason. You would anticipate they would make the playoffs. An explosive offense, but a little loose with the ball. All that being said, at 10-3, I think they're deserving of the number four slot in our rankings.
Yeah, I feel like this is also another one of those sports car teams where, like, if Sam Darnold's not turning the ball over and playing well and that defense is getting stops, I feel like they're a really tough team to beat. They've got, like, we've said it before, they've got, like, a two-headed monster on the ground. They've got an unbelievable pass catcher in JSN. And when Darnold's spinning it right, I don't know. They're a complete offense, and then their defense is scary as well.
I think there's an outside chance that they end up winning that division up there. I mean, they've been playing right with the Rams. They're keeping pace with them, and all it's going to take is for one game to go their way, and the Seahawks going to be at the top of that division. So I'll move it right along to number three here. It's the Pats unjustifiably dropping a spot because they were sitting at home on the couch for their bye week. Didn't get to play this week, but because the Broncos end up beating – spoiler right there – Broncos end up beating the Raiders, they end up surpassing the Pats. They do have the tiebreaker advantage over the Patriots, but this Patriots team is absolutely rolling. They are, again, you can beat the dead horse, however you want to say it, about the schedule.
Jeez, leave that dead horse alone, dude.
Well, I'm not beating that dead horse. I won't be that guy. But the Patriots are coming off before their bye week. The Giants, they went out, they were playing physical. They probably the most physical I've seen that team play all season, and they absolutely blow the doors off the Giants. We're going to learn a lot about the Patriots over the next couple of weeks. They got the Bills, big divisional matchup, hat and t-shirt game for the Patriots if they're able to win this one out at home. And then the Ravens, which just got flexed to Sunday Night Football. So probably arguably their two toughest tests of the season right now, playing in December. You know, this is the time where, you know, the champions are made and the pretenders fall back to the pack. And this is the Patriots' opportunity to really kind of assert themselves in the AFC.
Yeah, I feel like critical week for the Patriots. I feel like if you go out there and get stomped at home by the Buffalo Bills, who are admittedly hotter than a pistol right now, I don't think it's not a good look. I think the Patriots need to be competitive this week. It's encouraging to see the last game that they had, like, a really, like, prime, I want to say prime time, but like a legitimate matchup with the Bucks. They were up to the test. I know the Bucks were a little bit banged up, but it looked like the Patriots came out in that one. The Patriots came out really well, like you said, came out shot out of a cannon versus the Giants. Hopefully those are all positive signs. Mike Vrabel off of a bye in with Tennessee had a winning record and was extremely, extremely successful out of the bye down there.
6-0, I think.
Yeah, so like I think all signs point to this game being a competitive game, but there's a lot of pressure on, admittedly, a lot of pressure on the Patriots, and we're going to see if their pretenders are for real. But body of work right now, how they're playing ceiling-wise, I think they're one of the best teams in the league. Manish, do you want to throw a little cold water on that? Or do you want to just jump into our number two team?
No, I'm not going to throw any cold water on it. No, you know, we've had much discussion early in the week about who should be number two, who should be number three. Broncos, Patriots. A week ago, we had the Patriots at number two. They were the number one seed in the AFC. At that point, they were the only team with 11 wins. Well, none of that is true now because the Broncos have joined them as an 11-2 team. Also have not lost since September, which is really mind-boggling to think about. And currently, the Broncos are the number one seed. You know, full disclosure, if you look at the final month of the season, Denver is going to have a tough road here. They've got the Packers, big test at home. You know, what they have going for them is that they are undefeated at home this season, but still going to be a tough test against the NFC North leaders. Jacksonville, another team that's been exceptional over the last several weeks, in 2 weeks. And they got Kansas City, who may not make the playoffs, but they're still Kansas City, so they're not a layup. And they finish off against another team that has a ton of wins this year in the Chargers. So it's going to be a tough final four games. They are squeaking by bad teams. I fully admit the last 2 weeks have not been particularly impressive when it comes to style points. They get none, squeaking by the Commanders, and then last week beating a terrible Raiders team by a touchdown. All that being said, as I have previously mentioned, they are playing with fire because they do not really have a semblance of a running game. Bo Nix, third in the NFL in pass attempts. The good news for them is that he's third in the NFL in completion, so he's been fairly efficient in that respect, but they can't be one-dimensional for as good as their defense is. If they can't get any semblance of a ground game going when it matters most, they'll be a one-and-done team if they don't get that number one seed.
I feel like the Broncos are one of those teams who's just really good at leaning into their identity right now, right? They have a really solid defense with a young, exciting quarterback. They're all behind Tom, all behind Sean Payton. And I even though I don't who cares about like who would jump to, but I do. The Broncos are a top three team in the NFL. They have the best. If you picked any two units in the NFL, like top tier units, you're probably picking the Rams offense and the Broncos defense. Like that would be the super team in the NFL this year. So I think the Broncos are going to ride that defense as long as they can take them. I think the Broncos' success in the playoff really banks on getting that first round bye in a home game in the divisional round. Because like you said, Manish, they are undefeated at home. Having a good defense in Denver in that stadium, Mile High, is always going to be an advantage. So as a Pats fan, I would love the number one seed to not have to go up there and play them in January.
Yeah, it's the home field advantage for me that scares me with Denver. Anybody has to go there. Like we said it last week. We don't need to keep going on it. But that home field advantage is going to mean a lot if Denver gets it.
Dude, I also saw a stat somewhere where the Broncos have 11 more sacks than the next closest team. And if they stay on pace for their amount of sacks they get per game for the rest of the game, they'll have the most sacks since like the 1985 or the 1986 Bears. Like it's just an insane, insane pass rush. Sorry, Bears is messaging me. I can't look at two things at once, dude. If I tried to chew bubblegum and walk, dude, I'd end up flat on my face, dude. But I'm just going to jump into number one team, dude. It's obviously the Rams. I don't know. What else do we say about this team? They took a bad team to the woodshed this weekend. They're going to be the number one team until somebody legitimately knocks them off. Yeah, a bad loss to the Panthers. That's one thing. But, I mean, they're still the number one seed in the NFC. They're still the number one on a lot of other power rankings. And they're going to be number one on our power rankings until we have a legitimate reason to move them. And I don't think that reason has come along yet.
Nope, it hasn't. And we're going to find out a lot about them over the next couple of weeks with their matchups with the Lions. And then the big one, like I just mentioned with the Seahawks, could be for divisional seeding there, the Seahawks in 2 weeks. So we'll learn a lot about them then. Just to mention a couple teams, honorable
Wait,
mention.
Before we get off the Rams, I will say, as a noted Drake May underwear wearing homer, Matt Stafford put himself right back squarely in the MVP race. I think he's probably the front runner now. 281 yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He's had, I think, with those 2 interceptions last week, I think it's just like fucking 30-something touchdowns and hold on, it's right here. 35 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. It's an absolutely absurd touchdown to interception ratio.
Absolutely. Righted the ship very well after that tough loss. The honorable mention teams that probably could be seen in these rankings that we have this week are the Buffalo Bills, obviously, the Jacksonville Jaguars, who now sit atop the AFC South, and in my opinion, the most dangerous team right now in the AFC, and that's the Houston Texans. I think we're going to be seeing them on these rankings very soon. Let's move it into the pick segment here.
Real quick, honorable mention right team, Colts signed 44-year-old Philip Rivers today. Let's see. Dude, he's on the Hall of Fame ballot. And he got signed today. It's just unbelievable.
It's wild. Picks.
What's going on, NFL fans? It is another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We got Burge and Manish alongside. Manish, do you want to introduce our special?
Now it's time to go into all of our picks for last week. Last week was a very interesting week for the picks here. Current standings where we sit right now through 14 weeks of the NFL season. Manish 17-24-1. Joe 19-22-1.
It's so bad.
Burge 23-19. All right. I'm just gonna get right into my picks here. I'm gonna start with the Green Bay Packers minus 2.5 against the Broncos. We just talked quite a bit about both of these teams in our rankings segment there. Green Bay, when I'm going to use Joe's analogy, when that car is firing on all cylinders, they can play with anybody out there. Denver's offense, to me, this is the game I feel like we're going to see that offense hold them back. I feel like that the Green Bay is going to put up points in this game. still going to be close. I don't think Denver is going to be able to hold them where they've held teams consistently throughout the season, just based on, you know, Green Bay is kind of asserting themselves in that NFC North there. So Green Bay minus 2.5. Well, my next pick,
massive Packers fans this weekend. I think we're
I think that goes without saying. Second pick, I'm taking the Miami Dolphins plus 4.5. They are playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers on Monday Night Football. I don't know what's going on down there in South Florida, but Mike McDaniel has this team playing outstanding over the last four weeks or so. The Miami Dolphins on a four-game winning streak. Their defense has not given up more than 17 points in that span. And we've talked a lot on this podcast about the Steelers and what we think about them. I don't think any of us thought that they were going to beat the Ravens last week. I think it says a little bit more about the Ravens than it does about the Steelers. The Steelers couldn't run the ball at all last week against the Ravens. They come out of there with a win. The Dolphins, surprisingly, are still fighting for their playoff spot. Outside chance, very low percentage chance, but they still are alive courtesy of their four-game win streak. I like them with the points here. The Steelers still, again, I've been a hater of the Steelers all season. So I'm going to stay with that, with the pick here, Miami plus 4.5. And my lock of the week, I'm taking the Carolina Panthers minus 2.5 on the road against New Orleans. Carolina.
I can't believe you're going to make the good people of this podcast watch that damn game.
Hey, you know, it is what it is, man. Carolina, they have surprised me quite a bit over the last month. Surprisingly, right now, they are right in the thick of that divisional race. The Tampa Bay Bucks trending down, Carolina Panthers trending up. If you told me that at the beginning of the season, especially when Baker was playing at an elite level and that team was on firing on all cylinders atop our power rankings and all that, I would have laughed. But suddenly they're there. Bryce Young's playing well, defense playing well. New Orleans is coming off a massive win last week against the Bucks, a team that, you know, again, trending down. New Orleans really doesn't have a whole heck of a lot to play for. Quarterback carousel, everything there. I think that they, quote unquote, New Orleans Super Bowl was last week, and I don't see them, you know, beating a division opponent 2 weeks in a row. So my lock of the week is Carolina minus 2.5. Manish, go.
I'm going with the Bengals. Their playoff chances are dwindling by the second. They're not officially eliminated yet at 4-9, but they are playing the Ravens after beating the Ravens handily about 2.5 weeks ago. I don't know what's going on with Baltimore. I don't know what's going on with Lamar. He does not look anywhere close to how he has looked the last couple seasons at 6-7, crushing loss to the Steelers. They get the Steelers at the end of the season again. Maybe that game matters. Maybe it doesn't. But what I do know is that Joe Burrow will light up the Ravens again. Tough loss for Cincinnati in the snow at Buffalo. A couple critical mistakes in the fourth quarter, but I just don't think the Ravens have any juice left. I think they're a team that's sputtering. I don't think they will right the ship. Give me the points with the Bengals. Who knows if T. Higgins will play after he had a monster game but suffered another concussion evidently. But either way, they got Burrow. They got Chase, and they're getting points. So give me the 2.5 in Cincinnati. The second game I'm going against Burge has become a recent theme. I am taking the Broncos. Home dogs, 11-2, currently the number one seed, as earlier mentioned, in the AFC, getting points. I know the Packers are playing well, coming off that win against the Bears, but the Broncos are 6-0 at home. And the Packers, for as good as their defense is, they're stingy in terms of allowing points and yards, but they are 25th in takeaways, only 11 turnovers. That's hard to imagine. You know, they're not as opportunistic as you may think on the surface, just given how stingy the yards and points are. I just like Denver at home. If this game were in Green Bay, you know, I probably would go the other way. But this is a team that, again, has not lost since September. They don't win handily outside of a couple games, so it'll be a white knuckler, but give me Denver at home getting the points. It's too hard to stay away from a team that's 11-2 getting points at home. And my lock, a couple weeks ago I think I said lock of the season. I'm going with lock of the lifetime in this game.
Oh my god, dude.
Lock of my lifetime. I am taking Buffalo Bills on the road, giving a point to the 11-2 New England Patriots. Now, I say that for a number of reasons, not because you guys are completely biased Patriot homers, but because It is very difficult in this series for Buffalo to get swept. They haven't been swept by New England since 2019, when somebody named Brady and Belichick, were roaming the sidelines. Those guys are long gone. No disrespect to Mike Vrabel and Drake May, but I think that this is a real revenge game. The Patriots, big win in primetime earlier in the season, week five, I believe, in Buffalo. I do not see them sweeping the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen playing like an absolute beast. There may be some people on this podcast who want to poke holes in his game, but the bottom line is 34 total touchdowns. You had mentioned earlier, Joe, that I believe Matthew Stafford has 35 passing touchdowns. Well, Josh Allen, 24 passing touchdowns, 12 rushing touchdowns, including that ho-hum 40-yard touchdown run last week against the Bengals. The guy is an absolute terror on the field. He's not going to win MVP this year. He's still the best quarterback in the NFL. I'm sorry, Patrick Mahomes. I think it's Josh Allen now. He will not allow this team to get swept by the New England Patriots in a game that the Bills absolutely need. They've been white hot. I love the pick. I think it's going to be an incredible game. It might be the game of the year. I think this comes down to the last few minutes, and I'm taking my chances that the Bills are going to win this one. Lock it
in.
Right,
let me just get into it. Wait, is that all your three? That's your three, right? That's your
lock? Yep. Three.
All right, so I'm going to start out with taking the MF and home dog of the week, the hungry mother effing dog of the week. I can hear it barking all the way down the street. Can somebody put that dog inside? I can hear it barking from over here. Give me the Patriots plus 1.5 at home. Josh Allen.
Plus one.
I've got it at plus 1.5 on DK right now, live line.
Right. The official betting website of this podcast has been BetMGM, so we're going with plus one.
Doesn't take any wind out of my sails whatsoever, dude. I'll be taking Patriots money line in my own betting on the couch this weekend. I think, Manish, you're completely right. He's an absolute monster. 24 touchdowns through the air, 12 on the ground. He's been going off these last couple weeks. 6 touchdowns a couple weeks ago. That 40-yard run in the comeback versus the Bengals last week. There's enough that – I mean, the Bills are hotter than a pistol. I think the one thing that you said that piqued my interest is he is not going to let this team lose. And I agree. Best players in the league, the best players – in leagues, in sports, MVPs, they raise their team to another level. I think the one Achilles heel in Josh Allen still in his game is that he tries to do too much. And if he tries to do too much and turns the ball over versus the Patriots on Sunday, he's going to have a really tough time covering that point in Foxborough. Is it an emotional pick? Did I think long and hard on my ride home about making it my lock and just going full homer? Yeah, I did. But I think picking against Manish here to try to get a little positioning at the end of the season and riding with my boys is something I'm fully willing and able to do this weekend. But yeah, I don't feel great about this pick. I would love if it was closer to a field goal. If we're being totally honest, I would love it at like 2.5. But I think this is one of those lines that's probably going to move when we get closer to game time, because I think, Manish, you probably got minus one at like minus 105, minus 108, and then I've got minus 1.5 or plus 1.5 at minus 120. So there's got to be some kind of price correction in the market at some point. I don't know what the hell is going to happen with this game. It smells like a stinky line. It just smells like a stinky line to me. Something weird's coming in this game. I could just feel it, but hopefully the Pats will be on the winning, the better side of that, covering 1.5. Next game I have the Chargers plus 4.5 on the road versus KC. KC's coming apart at the seams here. The Chargers getting 4.5 points in Arrowhead. KC's been sneaking these games out. They've been eking these games out. So I'm going to take the Chargers plus the points. The Chargers are vying for a playoff spot. They're trying to stay relevant in the wild card race here, and they're directly competing with KC, their divisional opponent. So I feel like this is going to be a close matchup regardless. I like the Chargers to win this game outright, so taking 4.5 points was easy for me. And then for my mortal lock of the week, and I've decided, just like Manish is going over the top, but lock of the century, I think we might have had a lock of the millennia at some point as well. But
we did.
If I lose a lock of the week until the end of the year, my dog will be making the picks for the rest of the year. And then if I lose my week 18 lock, my dog would be picking all of my September picks for next year. And if I don't go at least 500 in September next year, he will keep picking until he goes five.
Let's go, Farley.
So yeah, give me the Rams minus 5.5 at home versus the Lions. I think the Lions got right versus a terrible Cowboys defense last week. I think the Rams are a lot different story, a lot more put together. I think traveling to L.A. and playing in the Rams stadium there is going to be a tough task. I think the Rams will be able to cover 5.5 points. I think they're lagging right now. And I think there's something to be said that they still need to keep winning to have the number one seed and to win their division with the Seahawks pushing them. So maybe in this spot, if they had a one or two game lead, maybe they take their foot off the gas. But with a team like the Lions coming in, a team like the Seahawks pushing them in the conference and the division, I don't think there's any way a McVay team falls asleep at the wheel in this game and they get out of this game covering 5.5.
There it is.
My dog better be good at gambling, dude.
I want Farley picks. I wanted it when you made that bet a couple weeks ago. I want it now.
The official bet is go Lions. If this bet or any of the other bets lose, this week, next week, and the week after, it will be the next week Farley makes a pick. But if I lose 18, it'll be September of next year, and I will not take back my lock of the week from Farley until he goes at least 500 in 1 month. That is the official podcast bet. Throw in an ayahuasca hut.
Can't wait.
I'll go 0-4. I'll go in the ayahuasca hut or something. I don't know.
Oh, boy.
I got three fantasy picks for this week. It's fantasy playoff time, guys. I don't know if your teams are good enough to make the playoffs, but if you are and you're completely desperate, I have to put that disclaimer out there. The first guy I'm going to mention is somebody that Tom mentioned earlier. Harold Fannin Jr. seems like he's got a little connection with Shedeur Sanders. 11 targets last week, over 100 yards. They're playing the Bears this week. I don't anticipate that type of return. But I think that Fannin, who played well with Joe Flacco earlier in the season, can be a viable guy you can put in your lineup. A couple other running backs. Again, bottom of the barrel stuff. Chris Rodriguez is now the lead running back for the Commanders. They're playing the Giants, who stink. Maybe it's worth a shot if you've got some injuries. And finally, Blake Corum. I know that Kyron Williams is the lead dog there, but the Rams are blowing teams out, and Blake Corum's getting his touches. You never know. He could get another 100-yard touchdown game like he did a week ago. Corum, Rodriguez, Fannin, fantasy playoffs. You know, if you need any of these guys, you're probably in trouble, but you never know with Fannin. I think Fannin's the guy to keep an eye on. And finally, I would like to say thanks again for Tom Palosaro joining us, a terrific guest, the hardest working guy in NFL media, the guys I've been around over the last 20 years, incredible work ethic, one of the most genuinely nice people in the industry. And check out his 24 young coaches to know in the upcoming head coaching cycle on NFL.com. You can check out Tom also on the Insider Show, a terrific show that brings his reporting and other reporting from the network to life. Tom is on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 7 p.m. Eastern, with a host of other great reporters. Terrific show. I encourage you to read this article because we're going to find out and hear a lot of these names over the next several weeks when Black Monday comes and some of these head coaching openings come to light.
We're going to share it on the X feed. So right when this episode drops, it'll be on the X feed. That's where you can find it.
Yeah, if you like good hair too, tune into the YouTube. But yeah. That has been another episode of the Between the Tackles podcast. We're going to get out of here. We're going to see you on Monday. Goodbye.